Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we explore on this show. And I often share ideas and insights. I tell stories of some of the big epic fails that I've made and also some of the strategies that I have found that have worked. And I am always reaching out to the larger education community, trying to figure out what will help teachers empower their students with voice and choice. And one of the things I love to do is interview folks who are truly experts in the field who are also currently still working in a K-12 school. And today I've interviewed one such person. Now, if you are not familiar with him, his name is Dwayne Reed. You've probably seen one of his viral videos before. Mr. Reed is the teacher you always wish you had. He is America's favorite rapping teacher and the chief enthusiasm officer of Teach Mr. Reed, the global education company inspiring the world to make learning fun again. And I love that notion of fun. The passionate educator, prolific author, and engaging speaker was catapulted into notoriety by his blockbuster music video, Welcome to the Fourth Grade, and has since been featured on Good Morning America, World News Tonight, BBC News, The Jimmy Kimmel Show, and in The Washington Post and Time Magazine. As a viral phenomenon, Mr. Reed spreads his message of love, inspiration, and empowerment that reaches a weekly audience of more than 100,000 followers, subscribers, readers, listeners, and fans. Each month, hundreds of new and aspiring teachers attend his engaging live and virtual seminars and rousing interactive workshops to experience the thrill of teaching via Mr. Reed's riveting accounts of and cautionary tales of teaching in inner city Chicago. As an avid philanthropist, Mr. Reed has partnered with iconic brands that include 3M, Old Navy, Arby's, Abbott Laboratories to celebrate educators and raise awareness of youth issues. He has a heart for equity, and I love that about him. You can hear it in this interview. Dwayne Reed also supports countless youth charities, after-school programs, and educational nonprofits dedicated to student-centered learning and academic achievement. He is also the author of a couple of books. I think one is about to come out and one has already come out. There's a phenomenal children's book, and I just want to say I love his work, and I was super excited about interviewing him. He enjoys spending time with his wife and his newborn son, and you can just hear his passion for making a difference in education. So I was super excited to interview him. And without further ado, here is the interview. All right. Well, thank you so much for being willing to have this conversation. And before we get started, just share a little bit about your personal journey, Dwayne, and how you got into STEM. I would love to hear about that.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on the show. John, my name is Dwayne Reed. Most people refer to me as Mr. Reed. I've been in education for the last 5 years. But, you know, with COVID, it's felt like 5 years in and of itself. So for the last 10 years, I feel like I've been in education. And having been in education, I've always been surrounded by STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math. While I've never taught those things per se, being able to integrate that into my language arts classroom has always been important. Funny, whenever I would teach math to my students, my scholars, they'd be like, Mr. Reed, you don't teach math. Why are you in here doing this? I'm like, no, I do teach math. I do. In science, I actually had a music video called Welcome to the Fourth Grade, which went viral. And in it, I'm dressed as Albert Einstein and I'm dressed as, you know, a scientist. So I've kind of always been, you know, closely around STEM education throughout my journey in education.
And I'm curious, because your background is English language arts, and then you also a little bit of social studies too. What I'm curious about that for a second, what lens do you think you add to that with your background in ELA, like how could that speak into the STEM education world as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I'm really wordy, right? And I'm big into helping process some of those numbers and those story problems. So I think being able to break it down through a language arts lens, as opposed to just numbers, ones and twos, X and Y, being able to break it down and put a story behind it, because all math is, all science is, all engineering is a story. And what, you know, ELA teachers, language arts teachers or English teachers can do is you just put a story to those numbers, or you just put a story to, you know, X, find X. Oh, what is X? Well, X could be, you know, the hidden treasure. And now me finding X is not just an angle I'm trying to find, but me finding X is this hidden treasure. And now I'm a pirate and I'm trying to find it. And now the story of that math comes to life. So I think that's the lens by which I've, you know, integrated STEM into English language arts, or brought ELA into STEM.
I love that. Well, and one of the things I'm struck by is, you know, when I taught, so I came from a social studies language arts background too, right? So I can relate to that. I was a history major who then got additional, I did a lot of coursework, didn't realize I had enough to then be able to teach reading. And so I taught reading intervention, and I kind of taught it differently. I taught reading intervention through journalism and through choice-based reading. So my approach was a little bit different. And one of the things I was struck by when I shifted to teaching self-contained in math was students don't hate word problems. They hate bad word problems because they hate bad stories, right? And so I remember, I mean, my kids play baseball. They love baseball. I remember a word problem where you're supposed to use a Pythagorean theorem to throw the guy out at second base. And I thought, no catcher is thinking Pythagorean theorem. That's what I need right now. You know, so where is the authenticity? And I was struck by just the importance that language arts has that could speak into the STEM community of the power of stories, the power of good stories, the authenticity of stories. I'm just wondering if you could speak to that for a moment. I know we're a little off script here, but, you know, what do you think is the power of stories to drive creativity?
Yeah, it's so funny that you mentioned that, John. Just today, I pulled an eighth grade class, and while they were working on a project that I put them to, I said, for these next 10 minutes, I'm just going to share a story. And I shared a story about how someone had broken into my house when I was 10 years old in fifth grade, and the details that I was using, and they were able to put themselves, one of my scholars at the end said, Mr. Reed, I was able to put myself into that story. It was like a movie in my mind. And I think the power of stories comes into place because our scholars or the reader or the listener can place themselves there. They can empathize. They can say, oh, that's something that could happen to me or has already happened to me. That's me. I'm there with you. And I think once I bring you over onto my side, on the dark side, if you will, of a good story, I've got you, I've caught you, I've hooked you, and everything else is just bada bing, bada boom. So man, just being able to, as you said, make it authentic, being able to make it relevant, and then make it interesting, like, that's kind of my trifecta of I got you.
Yeah. It's so interesting that you mentioned empathy, because, you know, in design thinking and in the engineering process and a lot of those things, there's been a real shift in probably the last 30, 40 years toward the role of empathy in design and in creative work. And yet it seems like social studies and language arts both have this really important lens that they can provide in terms of empathy. And I'm curious, where do you see empathy playing a role in that creative process?
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is awareness. Like, you know, Dr. Maya Angelou, she said something to the effect of, you know, when you know better, you do better, right? You know, I often tell, you know, my students, like, you don't know what you don't know. So when somebody makes you aware of something that you might have otherwise not have known, now you can do better, now that you know that. So when you think about empathy, it's not just I'm creating this robot. I'm using AI. I'm coding this. It's I'm coding this for a reason. I'm creating this robot for a reason. I'm, you know, using this AI for a reason, to serve someone else. I have to put myself in someone else's shoes. And that's my reason. That's my purpose. That's my drive. Now let me, you know, go deep into my mind and try to be as creative as possible to fix this problem. And that all starts with being able to empathize, put myself in their shoes, because I've been made aware of certain issues. And that's where you get the ELA, and that's where you get the social sciences involved. Oh, I didn't know that that existed. I didn't know that that was a problem. I didn't know that that was plaguing millions of people. Cool. Now I know. Let me do something about it.
One of the things I love about that, the way you kind of think about it and define empathy too, is that it goes beyond just saying, you know, what do other people want, which is often what we think of in empathy when it comes to design. But you're really saying, what are the bigger issues? What are the systems? What are the structures? And it has me thinking about sort of the connection that empathy and design have to this idea of equity. And so one of the topics we talk about a lot on this podcast is the notion that all students deserve access to creative opportunities. And I'm curious, what do you see as that relationship between STEM and equity?
Yeah, I think without having, you know, proper access to STEM education, I think underrepresented communities remain underrepresented. I think that, you know, genius has no race, right? Genius has no color. Genius has no ethnicity. Genius has no, I don't want to say no budget, but it has no, there's no amount of money that makes someone genius. You've got it. And we've all got that little bit of genius. It's just that some of us need more opportunities to showcase that. Some of us need more opportunities to say, hey, look, I've got just as much genius as the next person. So I think having equal access to STEM education, it levels the playing field. So you've got kids from the suburbs, you've got kids from the hood, you've got kids from rural America or globally, wherever. Being able to have equal access to STEM resources and STEM activities levels the playing field. And now it's like, yo, who's the best of, you know, this science at the moment? Who's the best with this technology at the moment? And let's go. Like, let's go with them. Let's rock with them. You know, I think it's really important also that we encourage diversity within the STEM field. You know, it's not often that you see little Black girls wanting to become scientists, and it's not because they can't or they lack the smarts or the intelligence. It's because they haven't seen themselves represented as that. So the more we start to encourage this diversifying of the STEM world, the more we'll start to see those little Black girls shine, like Zuri off of Black Panther, for example.
Yeah, and I'm also struck by just the importance of that for a kid who's white, right? Who comes from a place of privilege, or who comes from a culture with more power, to say that's important that they have that exposure to the diversity in STEM as well, right? They benefit from it. It's something that every student has that benefit from.
Yeah, absolutely. I read a stat the other day that said if a African-American boy from an inner city has a Black teacher between the grades of third through fifth, they are close to 30% more likely to go on to finish high school. And, you know, close to 20-something percent more likely to actually go through and finish college. But it also said that the percentage of white students third through fifth grade who had the Black teacher, their percentages increase as finishing high school and actually finishing college as well. So it's like them being exposed to, oh no, genius exists in people who have less than me, or who have, you know, more melanin than I do. So I think they're definitely on the receiving end of great benefit as well when we diversify the STEM education world.
So I want to think for a moment about this idea of kind of the why, and then we'll get into the how here in just a moment. When we think about STEM education, we know it's a big priority. People talk about it a lot. But what do you see as the primary benefits of students engaging in that sort of hands-on level of STEM?
I'd say primary benefits would be that we are encouraging, you know, our young minds to recognize that, you know, a world without science has, you know, crazy negative implications, right? Like, science just isn't in a classroom. It's not just in some room. Science exists everywhere. So I'd want them to begin to think about the implications of if STEM, you know, didn't exist. I also think, I also think one of the primary benefits of STEM would be, man, helping build up the next generation, right? And help those, you know, young minds find it attractive. So it's not just, hey, I want to go to the NBA or I want to play sports, or, hey, I want to be, you know, a fashion designer. Those things are great, but we also need scientists. We also need scientists like, you know, African-American woman who helped develop the Moderna vaccine for COVID. We need doctors. My wife and I, we had our baby 7 months ago, and I can't tell you, John, the joy and the security that we felt when our doctor came into the room and she was a Black woman. Like, we had these fears that, no, my wife is not going to be cared for. She's not going to be loved because of the racism and the racial disparities that we see in the medical field. But the moment we saw that Black woman, and she was a young Black woman, and she's from Texas, and she had a Southern accent, and she felt hospitable, we just felt cared for and loved. And that starts with STEM education. We need that. That's so, yeah, those are the primary benefits. Yeah. And like I said, the world just needs more scientists. We need more people who are going to step up and say, no, science matters. Here's the data to prove that. All right, let's keep it rocking.
What do you think are some of the benefits that kids gain when you think about, so obviously it prepares the next generation and prepares students for the STEM fields, but let's say a student doesn't go into a STEM field long-term. Let's say that they want to do something else. What do you see as, you know, what are some of the soft skills that students develop as they engage in meaningful, authentic STEM education?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it challenges them to explore the world around them. It makes the world fun when you begin to look at it like a puzzle piece, and what's the missing puzzle piece, and look at the world as a puzzle, and what's the missing puzzle piece, and how can I add to that? I think it's fun, and it makes other learning relatable inside and outside of the classroom. So you talk about your boys playing baseball. It's like, how can I make this relatable to my boys playing baseball? What math problem can I do? Like, boys, you hit, you know, 10 out of these 20 balls, you know, you get it out of, you know, the infield, then sure, I'm going to incentivize that somehow. But boom, that's math right there. And I want to do that because I want to make dad happy, or I want to make coach happy. So I think it brings their personal passions into STEM learning. Yeah. And again, I think being more well-informed, the more well-informed our scholars are, the better. So being able to expose them to, I was telling my kids today, like, coding is the future. You look at the people like the Bill Gates, and you look at the Facebook owner, Mark Zuckerberg, and you look at all these people, and they see that, and they're like, oh man, money, money, money. And I say, hey, that starts with coding. That starts right here. And y'all have the opportunity to work on coding right now. So I think it helps give STEM education, helps give our kids here and now, a better future for themselves to hold on to latch on to, and to strive for.
So if we think about this for a moment, you know, you see the value in it, you understand that it's important, but let's say you've got that teacher who says, look, I'm a little bit intimidated by STEM. You know, I see this working at the university. We sometimes get certain teachers, especially in the elementary area, they love reading. They love writing. They're excited about developing young readers. But STEM feels kind of scary. Math can feel scary. They might have some math anxiety. But STEM feels even scarier, right? Because they don't necessarily initially see what STEM is. It feels daunting. They know it's important, but they go, I feel nervous about this. What would you say to that teacher who says, I want to do this, but I'm feeling a little bit scared right now?
Yeah. I would say number one, me too. Right. So I would empathize with them. But I think it's often, I forget the phrase, but I think it can be like, you know, putting the medicine in with the milk or whatever, or the candy. It's like, I can use things like music or dance or art or sports or wherever my scholars, wherever their passions might lie. And then I can just insert STEM education into that, right? Mm-hmm. It's a matter of helping connect the dots for students so that they can turn their passions into something that can help benefit the world. So for that teacher who says, I'm scared, it's as daunting, I think I'm going to fail. I would encourage them like, okay, yes, you might fail, but a failure doesn't mean, you know, we're down and out. A failure could mean, oh, but your failure here has now challenged this scholar and they want to take this home and they want to try to get it right. So now they're on YouTube watching videos on this. Now they're on Khan Academy watching videos about this and trying to learn the science of this all. So I would definitely say, you know, hide the medicine in the milk, and the milk is the music. The milk is the games, the Fortnite, the Among Us, the TikTok. The milk is the art, the Picasso. And you can hide the medicine, you know, as it were, as the stem in there, just on the end, on the tip, in the beginning. I don't want any teacher to feel like they have to be this PhD professor in order to positively impact their students in STEM.
What would you say are some good first steps for teachers? So if you've got a teacher who says, I'm not so sure about this, I'm feeling a little bit nervous about this. And like you said, you brought up some practical, you know, connected to the music, to the art, to those things where someone might be a little bit more comfortable. How about just first steps? If you say, hey, next week, try blank. What would you say?
First, I would say this weekend, make sure you do a quick refresher. again, you get on YouTube 5-10 minutes and just make sure that you're on your P's and Q's. But as far as next week, you know, if I was speaking to a language arts teacher, I would literally steal what you just said, John. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. So if it's story problems, it's making sure that maybe I can revise the story problem and it's authentic. So now I'm using John's name. So now that perks John's ears up and he's actually interested and engaged more so in this topic. You know, if it's science, it could be, if I don't have the resources, I can, you know, maybe possibly bring in the science teacher and say, hey, I'll cover your class right now. Can you cover my class and just get us started with this? Because I want to get my kiddos engaged. Man, it's really soft for me. My thing is, it doesn't have to be explosive. I say all the time, it doesn't have to be perfect. You just have to make it special. And special could mean a lot of things to a lot of different people.
Yeah, and I'm struck by the notion too that connects to that. The idea that it may not seem like a big deal to you as a teacher, but it's a big deal to students, right? That little 45-minute maker challenge that you did that was done with, you know, whatever supplies you could pull together that were upcycled, and you were pushing kids to think divergently and thinking within, you know, that creative constraint. You might look at it and go, well, that was fun. There was some engagement there. That might be the thing they remember forever. And then years from now, they cite that when they say, hey, this is that was when I first got into engineering, or that was the first time I decided I wanted to try, you know, getting into coding, or, you know, and you're like, oh, yeah, it didn't seem like a big deal, but it was a huge deal to the kids you were working
with. Yes, that is so true. I think about my uncle. My uncle used to write poetry, and he used to write his name all swiggly. To think, man, this is like probably how French people write their names. And I like how he's rhyming. And that was when I was in first grade, 6-7 years old. And now here I am, you know, 20 some odd years later, I'm rapping, I'm rhyming, I'm writing my name all swiggly on checks.
So
you definitely remember those things. And, you know, for me as that teacher, if I did that 45-minute lesson, that makerspace, I might feel like, dang, that was terrible. Nobody got anything from it. It didn't go perfectly how I'd planned it. But like you said, one of those kids might be like, yo, that was it. Remember in fifth grade when Mr. Reed blank? Yeah, turn me on. And that's why I'm at NASA today. Like, I can't wait to hear those stories, John. I know they're going to happen.
And I love it. I just want to say as an aside, like, one of the things that first caught my attention with you is just how often you create those memorable experiences for students. And that boosts engagement, and that makes the learning stick. And that, you know, it has an educational value, but it is something that they will never forget, right?
Man, absolutely. I tell people all the time, I'm not the best teacher by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not even in the top 100 of teachers that I know. But my kids will never have had a better fifth grade experience. They will never get a better fifth grade teacher than me because they were my kids. It's not about making it perfect. It's about making it special. They remember that. At the beginning of the year, my first year of teaching, I had taught about foreshadowing. And I'd given examples and, you know, we had gone through it and, you know, assessed on it, so on and so forth. At the end of the year, I took my scholars to see the movie Wonder. And as we watched the movie Wonder, they implement, you know, the tool of foreshadowing. And at the very end of the movie, my student says to me, "Hey, yo, Mr. Reed, you remember when we had gone over that lesson on foreshadowing?" I say, "Yeah, they just used that in the movie." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is the thinking." Yes. Yeah, man. If you make it special, they'll remember it and they'll remember you, which is who doesn't want to be remembered?
Absolutely. So on this area of STEM, I just want to say you're connected to 3M's Science at Home series. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So 3M Science at Home is a free educational resource, or our free educational resources for teachers, parents, and students to make STEM accessible, more accessible, that they can do this at literally at home. You know, they can do this on the go, and so that they can connect science to just about anything. So it's a series of videos that they can watch. They can do at home, or they can do it in the classroom, and it's all about being able to learn and apply and do anywhere, anytime.
I love it. So one of the things I think about with that is, you know, what would you say to that parent or caregiver, you know, could be a grandparent, foster parent, anything, who wants to see children engage in STEM, but they're feeling a little bit nervous because maybe they don't have all the answers, or they don't have that STEM background, or, you know, there's some of that anxiety that they might feel. What would you say to that parent or caregiver?
Yeah, again, I would come beside them and say, "Hey, we don't have to be a Harvard professor or scientist in that regard whatsoever. Anything that you can give, I think just the boost of having grandma sit you down and say, "Hey, we finna work on this science project together," just that can go so far, John. I remember my grandma sat me down. I'm 6 years old, 5 years old. And she taught me how to count change. And you know, my grandma, she didn't go to college or anything like that. But I will never forget how powerful it was that my grandma taught me how to count pennies and quarters, nickels and dimes. And I think just having grandma or dad or mom or an uncle or your big brother or big sister sit down with you and watch one of these science at home videos and work through it and get their hands dirty or clean up the place around you. I think the power is in the relationship. I think the power is in the experience. And it's less about the head knowledge that they're given. Plus, again, with these 3M videos, like, they're supplying all the head knowledge that needs to be, you know, received.
Definitely. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your insights and your ideas and just making it practical and inspiring for everybody. Really appreciate your time. And thanks for being on.
Awesome. Thank you, John, for having me. It's a blast. Appreciate it.
All right. So that was educator Mr. Reed, Dwayne Reed. Again, please check out his work. Check out his social media. Just check out the good things he's doing in education. He is a truly inspiring person. And I just really got a kick out of this interview. So again, thank you so much for listening. If you would do me a favor, if you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast. Again, thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.